This segment is brought to you by Jigmaster Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and use promo code PNF20 and save 20% off your next jig order today.
You're listening to Bass Fishing for Noobs on the Paddle and Fin Podcast with your hosts Ryan Milford and Sean Lavery. Welcome back to Bass Fishing for Noobs on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. I'm Ryan. We got Sean in here.
Hey, guys. What's happening?
And tonight, we have Mr. Craig Dye in here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
It's awesome to have you.
Yeah. Craig's going to talk to us tonight. We're going to do a little, I guess, crankbait 101. You know, I've just recently got the crankbait bug because I didn't throw it for the longest time. And, you know, I put out a post. I was wanting to get somebody on that knows, you know, more about or knows a lot about crankbait fishing. And I put out a post asking if anybody wanted to come on or any suggestions. And we had, like, I had several people suggest Craig Dye. So, like, I was like, okay, I got to get Craig down.
Sorry.
but yeah, so Craig, for anybody that don't know you, you want to go over like who you are, what you do, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I won't go through everything, but I've been in the kayak bass fishing deal for a long time, you know, probably 8 or 10 years. I've been around since Chad started KBF and started doing all the opens. When he started Hook One in Tennessee is the same year that I moved there. And I got, you know, a great relationship with Chad from the very beginning. And, man, that's really where it all started. I mean, I started kayak fishing with my wife. Actually, I lived in Atlanta before I was in Tennessee in Nashville. And just for something else to do together for fun. And I'm super competitive. And when they first started having tournaments, I was lucky enough to be there at the very beginning of this stuff. And we didn't have hog troughs. We didn't have catch boards. We actually had a yardstick, and they give you a sticker. No joke. They give you a sticker that you had to stick on the yardstick, and like it was like,
oh wow,
that was your identifier. I mean, that was a long time ago. That was back. That was here in Georgia. I mean, it had to be 10, maybe 11 years ago, and you know, to see it grow, you know, to now is crazy, but. I've been doing it. I love it. I love filming. I love, you know, doing videos. I love, you know, I have two sons now. So now I film with those, you know, those guys, you know, those my kids. And I just can't get away from it. I love this stuff. And yeah, man, I'm 10 years in and I'm still here, you know, doing tournaments and, you know, just doing what I can and get out there to chase these crazy fish, man.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it is crankbait, like, is that like your number one technique, or I'd assume it's one of them since you're pretty well known for it?
Well, it's something I really enjoy. And, you know, I had a feeling you were going to ask me this question. So I was kind of thinking about it. So when I got into kayak fishing, I was always a paddling kayaker. I never pedaled. Right. I tried it for a little while. I was in a native for a while. They made great kayaks, but I don't know if my legs are too short. I don't know what it is, man, but I just wasn't comfortable having my knees kind of in my chest and like all that in front of you. So I was always a paddler. Right. So kayak fishing, you're always getting, the wind's always blowing you around. You know, you're always getting turned the direction you don't want to go. So I started power fishing a lot. I started throwing a lot of crankbaits, a lot of spinnerbaits. And, you know, throwing worms and that stuff. I mean, yeah, you can do it, but sometimes it's tough, especially when you're trying to pinpoint one little area or one brush pile or a drop off. And I just kind of, that's the kind of style of fishing I went to. And then I just started having a lot of success. And I was in Nashville early on when I first got there, when I really started throwing crankbaits a lot and throwing crankbaits on wood and rock, you know, because they have a lot of that. Percy Priest Lake was my home lake. And if you want to throw a crankbait on rock, you can go there and miles and miles and miles and just burn rock up all day. And when you learn how to do that and catch fish and get that reaction bite when you can't even catch them on a worm, but you can go there with a crankbait and make them eat. I just got addicted to it, man. I just, everywhere I went, I wanted to figure out how to catch those fish on a crankbait, you know, even if it's around grass, if it's wood, I mean, whatever it is, shallow, deep, you know, always wanted to figure out how to catch them on a crankbait. And I guess that's how it happened. And I still love it. I mean, I still have 3 crankbait rods in my kayak at all times. And, you know, it just gets bites, you know, that's what it is. You just get bites.
Man, what you just said about that's what I want to do now. You know, since I've kind of got that bug for crankbait, my buddy Thomas Davis, he was like, man, we got to get out on pre sometime and throw it out there. And he's like, it's fire out there. So like, I need to get out there and bounce it off stuff and give it a try.
Yeah. But it's something else. Man. It's fun. It's addicting. Get ready.
I already feel addicted, but for me, it's been one specific brand so far. And I don't know. I've kind of got the confidence in that brand at the moment, and I haven't really tried a lot of others. So how do you feel about that? Are you kind of brand specific on when you're throwing crankbaits, or do you have like several different brands that you'll throw, or how does that work?
Well, I'm not. To me, it's not always about what bait you're throwing or what kind of bait or what brand of bait. For me, it's about really putting the bait in the right spot. I mean, that bait's going so fast, man. I mean, even if it's a custom painted bait versus one out of the shelf, that bait's moving quick, man. And sometimes, you know, color and stuff like that can help. But for me, it's more about where you put it and how you present the bait. But for me, it's about consistency out of the package. The last thing I want to be doing on the water is trying to tune a crankbait in a kayak in a tournament. That's the last thing you want to be doing because it's not easy to do. It takes time. You got to do it 3 or 4 times. It drives me nuts. Okay. So what I learned is I started going to the Rapala, whatever you want to call it, products. And to me, those crankbaits are just so true out of the package that I just really started leaning toward those for, you know, DT6s to like, you know, your DT10s or DT14s. But for shallow stuff, it's hard to beat a Strike King square bow. I mean, they're made very solid. You know, I mean, you see KVD winning, you know, Elite Series on it all the time, stuff like that. So that's I use mostly Strike King 1.0s and 1.5s for my square bills. I do use the Rapala Brat sometimes. It's actually a Balsa square bill that has like a hard plastic cover. They're pretty cool. They're a little bit smaller. This is one right here, actually. That's the Rapala Brat. So this is the, you know, the Rapala Brat versus the KVD 1.5. So it's a little bit smaller, you know. But those are the two brands. Like 99% of the time I'm throwing, you know, if you're just talking crankbait, you know, if you're not talking, you know, rattle traps, but square bills from, you know, the shallow ones. Let's see, I don't have a shallow right here, but the Strike King, the 1.5 shallows, you know, they go, 6 inches deep, all the way to a Strike King 5XD, then you can go 20 foot plus. So, Strike King and Rapala are my two brands, to answer your question.
Okay. Yeah, see, I've got the confidence in the Spro Little John, right?
Yeah, those are good.
And, yeah. Yeah, and so I need to try some other ones. I've got some of the KBD. I think the only Rapala or Rapala, whatever you want to call it, but I think the only ones I really have of them are the Shad Wraps.
Yeah.
And I used to actually throw those every now and then back when I like first started fishing because I had people telling me, yeah, get Shad Wraps and throw them out there. But yeah. Man, they always told me to get the smaller ones, and I could not cast those to save my life. You know, I get like a 10-foot cast, and you know that's not far enough to work it. So
you throw in like the number 5s or the number 7s or where they are. They're pretty small ones. They're about that big. So actually, I probably have some right here.
Yeah, they're pretty small.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, this is the number 5, I think. Yeah, that's the 5 right there. So yeah, they're pretty small. So, but
dude, that even looked, I don't know, it could just be the camera angle, but that even looks big compared to the ones I was throwing. So I don't know if they make a smaller one than that.
Yeah, that's
it, it might be the same though.
Yeah, well, you know, the trick with throwing those shad wraps, you know, obviously throw them on a spinning rod and throw them with, you know, light braid, you know, 8 or 10 pound braid with like a fluorocarbon leader, you know, maybe 3 or 4 foot leader on there. And then the key is if you have a meat, like a too stiff of a rod, it's going to be impossible to work that bait. And you're also going to lose a lot of fish. So the rod is, you know, I imagine we'll get into that later, but I mean, a medium action, like a 6'6" or 7 foot, you know, spinning rod to throw those light crankbaits with some really light braid. That's the way to work those baits. That's how a lot of the pros do it. You'll see a lot of guys. I know Odd Defoe throws a lot of shad wraps on spinning rods, and, you know, so that's the way to go for that.
Yeah, see, I think back then I was still throwing mono on everything.
Hey, I still use mono too. I actually, you know, we can talk fishing line. I actually, on all my crankbait, except my spinning rods, on all my crankbait rods, I actually use monofilament. And
Straight mono.
And a lot of the pros use fluorocarbon, but David Fritz, y'all know David Fritz, probably the best crankbait fisherman ever, right? I met him, spent some time with him, and I asked him about that. And he sticks with mono, you know, 10 or 12 pound mono, 14 pound if he's, you know, throwing in some heavy wood shallow. But I like mono. It's cheap. You know, I buy these bigger spools like this here. I change it a lot. Y'all, you know how great mono casts. I mean, it's just so easy to work with. And the stretch is fine. You're using treble hooks. It's okay to have the stretch. It's not a problem. So as long as you keep an eye on it when you're fishing, check your line. You know, if you get snagged or you catch a big fish, just check your line and you're good to go. But I use 10 and 12 pound mono 99% of the time when I'm throwing crankbaits.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Since you already started on that, let me go ahead. Okay. So the first day that I was on crankbait, like just here recently, like seriously trying to throw it, the reel that I was initially using, I spooled up with, it was 12 pound line. It was that P line fluoro clear.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 100% fluorocarbon. It's got that stretch to it.
Yeah.
Because I thought the same thing, you know, got that stretch, throwing it on a medium casting rod. Well, you know, the beginning of the morning was crazy. Me and my buddy were both like hanging into fish, but like it was all like little dinks.
Yeah.
Ton of like probably like 10 inch fish.
Right.
And, but I, like they were, and then, you know, a little bit into it, we lose Sean.
No, I'm here. You're breaking up on me a little bit, but.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, kind of coming in and out, but I can hear you.
Okay. Well, a little bit into it, my reel blew up on me. It gave down on me. I had, you know, another rod that I wasn't really using. I took the reel off of it, and I believe it was 12 pound, 100% fluoro.
Mm.
And I don't think I lost another fish after that. So I was thinking maybe with the medium rod and that fluoro clear having that stretch, maybe it was having too much give in there. So do you not find that? I guess I should ask you what setups you would normally throw. Like, would you use a medium rod for? I think I was throwing like a medium diver crankbait.
Yeah. I actually, I throw a St. Croix, a Legend Glass cranking rod, a 6'10" for, and I basically have the rods for the depth, right? For, you know, basically how close am I going to be to the bank is a way how I choose my rod length. I know that sounds funny, but, you know, if I'm throwing shallow, you know, 10 foot or less, I'm probably going to be close to the bank most likely, throwing around wood, throwing around rock, you know, maybe throwing around some bluffs. or docks or anything, I need to be super accurate. So having a shorter rod, and yes, I use a medium, it's a St. Croix Legend Glass medium cranking rod. 6'10" is what I use for 10 foot and less. And I use mono with that. And I really, as long as you keep an eye on your hooks, for example, this is the crankbait I use at the Kayak Bass Fishing National Championship. I put a little video out today where I caught a 22 on a crankbait, on this crankbait. Wow. And I don't know if y'all happen to see that video, but I was cranking riprap at the National Championship a lot. I tried to get away from a lot of the anglers, and I fished way up north, kind of main river stuff. And I noticed on day three, I lost 3 fish on this bait. And what I... I know better, but I didn't realize is that once you crank rock a lot, these hooks actually get dull, a lot duller than they would be out of the box.
That makes sense.
So I mean, that's a sharp hook, but that's not in close to, like, if I took it out of this package right here, I mean, it would be huge difference. So I guess what I'm saying is I use mono with a medium rod, and I don't really have problem losing fish. As long as you have the right hooks and doing everything right, and set the hook right. Let the fish eat it. You know, I mean, those rods, you know, they have a lot of bend. You'll feel the bite. Let them eat it. You know, just give it a good sweep. You know, side. And you'll see some videos where I sweep up. I guess it's just instinct sometimes. You know, really, mm-hmm. You know, sweeping up, I mean, you're kind of, that's where the hooks are not at, right? You know, if it's in its mouth, that's kind of where the hooks are not at. So you really need to sweep to the side so it comes to the side of their mouth, you know, and grabs the inside of the side of their mouth. That's really the way to do it. I mean, but a lot of times you get a bite, you're just going to set it however you are just to set it. You know what I mean? You just do it. Just you don't even think about it. So if you go see that video I posted yesterday, I set the hook straight up. And that's not really the best way to do, but it is what it is, you know. But yeah, I use, like I said, I use a medium rod with monofilament line. And I do not have problems, you know, losing fish. But what that does, it really helps for that bait to run through, you know, around rock and wood without getting hung up as much. You know, if you use a stiff medium rod or a stiffer rod, that bait is just going to go and just, you know, that rod just has no give. You know, when it hits that log, it's just going to want to dig in and turn and then hook the log, right? But when you got a softer rod, it's going to come up and allow it to bounce off and deflect and just keep going.
I think that was a lot of my problem when I first started. Because I was fishing riprap a lot, because I was like, hey, they say, you know, take the deflection on riprap and it should, you know, that's when you get the hits. And Absolutely. Every time I'd hit, I'd get stuck. And I was like, oh, it just sort of drove me nuts. And yeah. I think that's what it was, that my rod was way too stiff. Now hearing you say that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you're throwing treble hooks in on the bottom of a lake. You're going to get hung. It's just part of the deal, man. And it's aggravating and frustrating. You're going to lose lures. You know, I don't like to take the time to use a lure retrieval tool because I just, when I get in a hurry in a tournament, I just want to get it off or break it and just tie another one and go. I know it's not the best way, but, you know, but to get hung a lot less, you know, it's throwing a crankbait that doesn't dig super hard in the bottom. Because if you're digging, I mean, if you're throwing a DT-10 in 4 feet, I mean, it's gonna, right. not gonna be a fun day. You know, DT-10 goes down to 10 feet. You know, on a normal long cast. So, you know, throwing a cavity 1.5 that goes to 3 to 5 feet where you reel a few times, then you're starting to feel the bottom, you know, and you're deflecting, you're not digging too hard. But, you know, having, you know, like for me, a KVD 1.5, a DT-6 and a DT-10, those three, 10 foot or less, you got it all covered. You know what I mean? From 2 feet, or really from 1 foot, you can run a KVD 1.5, you know, slow as you want. From 1 foot to 10 feet and everything in between, you know. So.
Now you mentioned speed there. How crucial is retrieval speed, and how do you vary that up or decide how fast your retrieval speed is?
100% for me, I'm constantly watching my depth finder. And I'm like, you know, if I, you know, let's just say I'm catching fish in that 4 to 6 and I'm throwing a DT-6, you know, yeah, I mean, retrieval speed is important, but as long as you're getting that bait down, I don't care if you use a high speed reel or a slow speed reel, really, as long as you get it down to where it needs to be and deflecting off the bottom, that's really the key. That's how you get those bites. Y'all know that, you know, you've seen it on a million YouTube videos. Get it down there. You know, because this bait running straight catches a lot of fish, man. Like, you can run this bait through schools and catch a lot of fish, kind of like throwing a topwater or a swim bait through a school that you can see in your depth finder. But the days when they're not feeding like that and you got to make them eat, you got to be hitting the bottom. You got to be hitting the bottom. So I use a Lose 6-8-1. That's the speed I use. And it's just kind of, it's not super fast. It's not super slow. If you use a real high speed reel, I feel like you kind of lose feel of what the bait's doing. I don't even know if that makes sense out there. And you had a slow speed reel and you're reeling faster, you just feel it better. You kind of feel what the bait's doing. But if you're reeling slower, but the bait's going super fast on those high speed reels, I just feel like you lose a lot of feel, a lot of touch of what the bait's doing, because you need to know when you have a piece of grass on here or a leaf and this bait's not running, because this is going to be a wasted cast. If you got a leaf on here, your bait's going to be all jacked up. And if you got a high speed reel, you're most likely not even going to know it until it gets back to your rod. And you're like, you just made the money cast on the perfect windy point, and it's just a big waste. A lot of times when you feel that, you reel it in quick, you clean off your bait, you get it out to where it needs to be, and you just keep going. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And I've definitely ran into a lot of those leaves in my time doing it. Yeah. Well, perfect time to start crankbait fishing.
Yeah, this time of year is going to be it's going to be aggravating. I'll tell you right now, when the leaves start falling, throwing like a paddle tail swim bait instead of a crankbait or a spinner bait sometimes might make it a little less stressful, but I'm still going to throw these. I mean, I just, the bite you get is just so much fun to me on these crankbaits.
How much can you clear a crankbait just by ripping it? You know what I mean? I've heard that, ripping it through grass like that to clear it and stuff, but every time I usually do that with grass on it.
If I'm throwing a rattle trap, I actually throw a, if I'm throwing a rattle trap through grass, right? I'm usually throwing a medium heavy rod. And I'm actually, sometimes if it's bad, I'll actually throw it on braid. It's not, sometimes you have to, because you throw this on Gunnersville and you get some hydrilla on it, and I'm throwing a mono and a medium rod. I mean, you can maybe pop it off, but you're most likely going to have to reel it in and just start over. That's just the way it is, but it just kind of depends on the situation.
Okay.
So what about like the deep divers, or what are you throwing that on, like a bigger, heavier rod?
Yeah, I throw it on a, I had a longer rod, like a 7-10, but since I switched to St. Croix, I'm actually using a 7'3" medium action Legend Glass cranking rod. And that's for throwing all the 5XDs and 6XDs. I got a bunch of them here, but this is a Strike King 6XD. This will go 20 foot plus.
We were actually talking about that, the last episode, wondering how deep some crankbaits actually go.
Yeah, I mean, I can get a 6XD. So this is the way I do it. So this, like I told you, I go from KVD 1.5s. You can use the 1.5 shallow, which is like 1 foot. KVD 1.5 regular, 3-5. DT6, DT6 though, on 10 pound line, you can get it down to 7, 8, 9, sometimes 10 feet if you burn it real fast. DT10, DT14, and then after the DT14, they have DT16s, but I usually jump up to the Strike King 5XD. These are sixes, but which can get you down to that 15 to 20. And then if you got to go a little deeper to get down to hit that rock or hit that brush pile, or you get that school down there on the bottom, I'll jump to a Strike King 6XD. I'm not throwing the big giant, what are they, are I don't know, 10XDs. I'm not throwing those giant. I'm just not deep in that. I don't have the equipment to do that. And then a kayak, that sounds like it just wouldn't be a whole lot of fun, to be honest with you. So, yeah. But I pretty much have down to about 23, 22 feet covered, with a Strike King 6XD. On a 7'3", a bomb cast, with the wind behind me, you can get down there and, get down to that, 20 foot plus for sure.
I was throwing a big, I think it was a 6-sense crankbait, like one of those huge ones with the monster bill on there, and it wore me out. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I had the same thing, using that medium rod that I got for crankbaits, throwing that medium diving Spro, which I believe has got like kind of tight wobble to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine. You know, after all day of throwing it, you know, it's kind of, it takes a little strength, but, I had a Sixth Sense that I bought that I tied on, and man, it feels like a fish is already on it when you first throw it out and start cranking. And so that was when I was wondering if I needed a heavier rod for that, because it was just so aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, I throw medium action rods, but yeah, they make medium heavy cranking rods. So for throwing those heavy, really big crankbaits, what I have works for me, but those Legend glass rods are not super like flimsy, if you want to call it that. They have a pretty good backbone, so it's not like a giant bow, you know, where I'm struggling, you know, where it's super, like it's just the perfect combination, you know, to be able to cast it far and to be able to handle, you know, the big crankbaits. And, you know, something to think about is when you're throwing these big crankbaits, having a slower speed reel. So you're actually going to reel a lot faster, right? You're going to reel a lot faster to get the bait to go down. But if you have a high-speed reel, you're going to reel slower. But that's going to be way harder on your arm, on your shoulder, on your wrist, and because you don't have as much power. Like, you have speed, but you don't have power with a high-speed reel, right? It's kind of like gears on a mountain bike, you know what I mean? You know, when you want to go up a hill, you hit the gear where you pedal really, really fast, but you're not going very fast. But you got the power to go up the hill, right? It's the same exact thing. So a lot of guys will throw like a 5-1-1 on these really, really, you know, hard to reel crankbaits. You're going to be reeling a lot faster, but it's way less work. And, you know, like it's not as much pressure on your body to reel that crankbait in. So think about that. You know, if you start throwing, if you start cranking a lot, 10 to 20 foot, think about, you know, it's going to be, you got to reel fast to get that bait down, especially in a crankbait, because it's going to be pulling you to the bait, right? So, you know, if you start throwing a lot of these big crankbaits and getting way deep, think about going to a lower speed reel. It'll be a lot less, you know, work on your body. And also, you've got more power to get that bait down there, you know, where it needs to go.
Here's a question. One of our listeners, Heath Barkley, we had him on here a while back on the new round table. He had a question he wanted me to ask you. And he was talking about when using the deep diving crankbaits, do you anchor yourself to keep the crankbait from like pulling your kayak towards it?
I actually don't. I really can't stand anchors. To me, it's a time waster. I mean, if you're on a giant brush pile where there's just tons of fish in there, and that's where you're going to be all day, you know, throwing a shaky head, throwing a crankbait. Maybe they come up school and you're going to stay there. I just don't anchor, for me personally. A lot of times what I do, let's just say before I even, you know, right now I'm running the Motor Guide XI3. Let's just say I got no motor, right? I have a paddle. That's all I have. I was doing this just with a paddle. So the key to throwing these big crankbaits is hopefully finding wind or current, right? I like to work the bait with the wind or current. So let's just say there's a little headwind. Let's just say you have this drop. It goes from, you know, 12 foot down to 20 foot, right? And you want that crankbait to go up on the 12 feet, come down, grind on 12 feet, and then come down the drop off, right? In a perfect world, that headwind would be coming at you because you can paddle up or pedal up, make a long cast into the wind, right? And then just let your boat drift back a little bit. And now you have the wind resistance pushing you. And now you're reeling. And you're not being pulled toward the kayak as much. That's a perfect scenario. Doesn't always work that way. But that helps. Another thing you can do is, instead of throwing straight in front of your kayak, throw to the side. So, you know, let's just say you want to throw to that bank over there. There's a brush pile over there. Cast it to your left. And just keep your rod basically at your bow, and you're just, the bait's coming this way. So it's gonna be a lot, obviously, it's gonna be a lot harder to pull your kayak, you know, to the side instead of just straight.
That was the second question.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask you about that too, because I've noticed that too. Like you said, even if you're fighting the wind, just trying to stay straight, a lot of times I'd try and crank towards the direction I wanted to go against, you know, so that I wasn't constantly being pulled that way and then have to adjust with my paddle to straighten myself out against the wind again.
Yeah, it's not easy throwing deep crankbaits when you're paddling. But if you like it enough and you can, if you've got on a school before where they're firing every cast, I mean, you figure it out. You know, you make it work. Yeah. You deal with it. You know, you just make it work. You know, now, luckily, I'm running a motor, which is great. But, you know, when you have a tailwind, it makes, even with a motor, you know, I don't care what kayak you're in. When you have a tailwind in a kayak, everything is difficult. You know, even if you're at a pedal drive, even if you have the 360 Hobie, you still got to take the time to turn it around and try to go backwards. Even with the X-Side 3 to push the motor to go backwards and keep straight, it's not easy, man. So, but, yeah, using the wind or current is really, you know, really the best way to go.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say you got a crankbait that's, I don't know, let's say dives 2 to 5 foot. That's what it says on the package.
Yeah.
Okay. You're in 6.5 foot of water. You also got a crankbait that's, I don't know, 5 to 8 foot. Which one are you more than likely to throw in that scenario? Because I'm wondering, are you wanting to try to stay at the bottom all the time? Or, I mean, are you trying to keep it kind of suspended and let them, you know, if they're at the bottom, let them come up to it? Or what? How are you approaching that situation where it's kind of in the middle of those two depth ranges?
Right. For me, it's all about kind of, you got to get a bite, man. You got to get a bite and kind of figure out what they're doing. If, you know, let's just say you're around wood, you know, you're in 4 to 5 feet throwing wood and, you know, you're throwing the KVD 1.5 and it's not hitting the bottom, but you're hitting off the wood and you're getting bit. And obviously it doesn't matter. You don't need to get to the bottom. You just, whatever the fish are doing. I always like to be hitting something. Now, I'm glad you asked that because at the national championship last week, I was fishing, like I said, upriver. I was actually fishing the old steam plant up there. I had the whole plant to myself. It was full of bait, full of fish. Obviously not the right size I needed, but I caught a lot of fish, man. It was a blast. On day one, I was throwing a DT6. My kayak was sitting in 8 foot of water, and I was throwing it at the bank, at a riprap bank. It was all, there's this big pocket. If you go look at the map at the steam plant at Gunnersville, way up north of Stevenson, there's a big pocket that goes into the steam plant that has riprap on both sides, and at the very back it's just concrete structure. Day one, when I would cast this DT6 to the bank, they would eat it almost the first crank, right? So I'm talking about 0 to 2 foot of water, and so I could have thrown a KVD 1.5, I could have thrown anything probably, and they would have ate it, probably spinnerbait or anything. Day two, they moved off and were out kind of suspended in that 4 to 6 feet. So I'm sitting in 8 feet. This bait's barely hitting the bottom, and I'm still catching them, but I'm not catching them right at the bank. I'm catching them halfway back to the boat now. So when I figure that out, I turn my boat parallel with the bank, right? And I just keep my bait. I keep my, the bank is 5 feet to my right or left. And I'm just throwing right down the bank parallel and keeping that bait in that 4 to 6 feet the whole time, right?
That way you're in the strike zone, your whole cast.
The whole time from my first three cranks of the reel all the way to right to the kayak. So that's probably the number one way to catch more fish than anybody else in a crankbait is to figure out that depth and parallel. I love parallel on a bank. If I can find a deep bank to parallel, I mean, I could do it for hours and feel like I'm being productive because you can cast it 2 feet and reel it back in 2 feet at 1.5, pick up your other rod at DT6 or DT10 and pull it back in 6 or 8 feet, and you see exactly where those fish are set up, and you can just focus on that, you know, for the rest of the day or the rest of the tournament, depending on what's going on, you know?
The few times I've been successful, it has been exactly in that situation. Like I was on a riprack bank, the wind switches and starts blowing into that bank. And then I did just like you said, I'd sit parallel to it and then just try right up against it with something shallow and then just work my way out until I found where they were sitting. And that is the couple days that I've had good crankbaiting days, that's exactly the situation. So,
and also you said you know, the winds are blowing on the bank, and that a lot of times I'll just go straight. I don't even care my history on the lake. I don't care at all. If the wind's blowing on one side of the lake and I know it has some depth to it, you know, it's not like a 1 foot flat for 300 yards, I'm going over there for a tournament. Even if it's a 3 hour Tuesday night tournament, if the wind's blowing on the east bank, you know, and it's summertime, it's fall, that's where I'm going to be. You know, that's just my, but that's my style of fishing. That's how I fish. You know, I like to fish that moment right there. And I, you know, I'll chase wind. I mean, it's a pain in the butt in a kayak sometimes, but I'll chase wind all day.
You know, you hear a lot of people talking about the windblown bank. Do you know the science behind it? Like, why that makes it good? You know, I've never understood. You know, people say it pushes the bait fish or whatever. Then I'm like, how does it push the bait fish whenever the bait fish are underwater? So do you know the answer to that?
I mean, I don't know the exact science. You know, I think it's, you know, maybe it pushes the algae that way or something like that. Then the smaller fish go to that, you know, then the bluegill go to that, and then the big fish follow that. But I also think the fish bite a lot on those windblown banks because, you know, the diffraction, you know, the light, and you just, you know, it's always a more alive. It doesn't matter where you go, man. It does not matter. It's always, you know, you go to Gunnersville and find an area that has 3 to 5 foot grass right now, and it's calm on one side and windy on the other. You're most likely, you throw a chatterbait at that, you're most likely to get a bit more on that windy side. You know, I just think it gets the fish fired up. Everything's moving around. I mean, just like Lanier, when all those boats are out there, you know, it's a pain to us, you know, but when it's, you know, waves on the bank, I mean, you can go throw a crankbait shallow on Lanier when there's 100 jet skis around and catch fish. You know, I think it's the same type thing. I don't know the exact science of it. You know, I just think it's, you know, smaller bait fish, bigger bait fish, bluegill, and then bass, and just combined with, I think, just the, I don't know, it just kind of creates more life in that side of the lake, you know?
It's where the party's.
Yeah, seems like it a lot. I mean, it's worked a lot for me. It really has.
All right. I was wanting to talk a little bit about, you know, retrieve a little more. You know, you touched on it a little bit about, you know, the crank and speed and everything. Tactical Bassin has a video out where they're talking about speed cranking. And basically what they're doing, they're putting like a 7-something to 1 gear ratio reel on. And they swear this is killer in fall or winter. I don't see how it could be good at winter, but I'm not going to question them because they're much better fishermen than me. But yeah, I don't know if you've seen the video or heard what I'm talking about. But basically what they're doing is they are just cranking as fast as they can. And, you know, they have an idea where the fish are at before they start doing this and going as fast as they can to make that go by that fish so fast that they don't know, that they just have to chase it or whatever.
Right.
And then occasionally they'll just do like a 1 second, just stop it. And said a lot of the time, if that fish is chasing it, you stop it for that 1 second and it'll smash it right then. But if you don't get a hit like that, just start as fast as you can again. And they said in the fall and winter time they have a lot of success with that. I didn't know if you had heard of it or if you did something similar. Or
well, I know a lot of guys do a start and stop retrieve. I actually normally don't. I probably should sometime, to be honest with you. But, you know, keep in mind, man, cranking, you can do it year round. You can absolutely, like, the coldest I've caught them is 48 degree water. And, you know, down here, I mean, it's not going to get, you know, depends on where you go, but, you know, that's pretty cold. But, I mean, there's something about it, man. If you, like in the wintertime, you know, that you have that bite window, y'all know what I'm talking about. The bite's going to suck in the morning. You're going to get out there. You're going to be cold. You're going to want to go home, you know, but about 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, the sun's going to come out. You know, if it's a calmer day with not a lot of wind, those fish just start biting. I mean, that's their window. Like, they're probably not going to feed at night a whole lot, you know, but that afternoon bite in the winter with a crankbait, or really any bait, I mean, it could be awesome, man. So, I mean, I seriously throw crankbaits 12 months. It doesn't matter where I'm at, you know. You know, obviously down in the Southeast, you know, all winter, and it's awesome. But the start and stop retrieve, I don't do it a lot. I probably should. But for me, it's still about hitting off that rock, hitting off that wood, and finding the depth that they're in. And, you know, that's really, you know, to me, that's what's going to get them to bite. But also, you know, we didn't talk about angles. And that's probably something that's not talked about more than anything. Because, like, if you just go up down a bank and throw a crankbait, not saying I can go back behind you and catch more fish behind you, but you have to be super accurate at casting, especially if you're fishing around laydowns and certain rocks and stuff, and to hit the right angles to come off that wood or rock to make that bait deflect. That's what's going to get those bites a lot of times, especially in the winter when they don't really want to eat, you know. But the angles, it's kind of hard to explain sitting here on the computer, but if we're out in the water, to be able to show, you know, to hit that log at the right spot, you know, like a lay down, right, is laying down against the bank, right? And you have that perfect little L right there, right, that everybody throws a frog or a spinnerbait. But if you land a square bill right in that corner, a lot of times that fish is sitting right there, and you give it two cranks, that fish is going to react, and he can't help it, right? He cannot help it. It's kind of like pitching a jig in there, right in front of his face. I mean, they almost eat it immediately, right? It's the same thing. So, you know, for shallow cranking especially, those angles and being super accurate with, you know, say throwing a square bill around all that cover, you know, that can be key.
I think I have to work on my confidence in not getting snagged in those situations, because I know that's you know, I've heard that that's ideal, and that square bills are great for that kind of cover, but I don't know if it's just my experience with treble baits or treble hook baits that I feel like I just constantly get them hung up on maybe it's that I'm not throwing at the right angle, or like I said, too stiff of a rod or something silly like that.
Yeah. You know, it usually is the equipment. And also, you know, when you reel down and you feel the rod load up, like it's probably a log, you know, it could be a fish, but that's okay, you know, because crankbaits, you can let them load up a little bit. I mean, when they eat it, right? So, you know, if you stop quickly, a lot of times you can get that bait to float out, you know. I mean, sometimes, and we all know how it is, nothing you can do. You got to go in there and go get it and, you know, mess up your favorite spot. That's how it goes, you know.
Or sometimes you set the hook and thinking that it's a fish, and it's not coming out at all.
Yeah, then you got to go in there and try to poke it out with your rod, and you know, but that's just part of the fun, I guess.
Hey, this last tournament that I fished, I was going along and I felt something smack it, and I set that hook and I'm reeling it and it's coming in. I'm like, oh, I got like a 4-pounder on here, man. The big old stick that was down there at the bottom. I thought I had a good one. Yeah. But Sean, I will say that, you know, back when I threw it several years ago, you know, I got snagged on everything, and that's probably why I haven't thrown it all this time and like had zero confidence in it. Now, you know, I got a little bit better equipment than I had back then and all that, so that's probably got a lot to do with it. I haven't had as much issue with snagging, or if I do, you know, it hasn't been that bad getting it out, which it could be my experience with snagging other things up as well, know how to get stuff out. You know, do that that bow and arrow thing quite a bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, we all get pretty good at getting lures unhung, you know. It's pretty funny.
I think that for me, it's going to start with getting a legit crankbait rod, because I don't have anything that's like even close to legit crankbait rod. It's just something I throw on whatever I have, and yeah, I think that's going to be my first step to getting better at crankbaiting, is for sure.
Well, you know, you don't have to go. You know, I use that Legend Glass cranking rod. It's an awesome rod. I mean, to me, it's. I mean, have I used 1,000 crankbait rods? No, but that one works for me, right? But a great rod, you know, Bass Pro, the Bass Pro carbon lights. I used to use those. Those are like $100, $110. Go get a 6'8" or a 7-foot medium. Make sure it's a medium moderate. The moderate tip is also key, right? So you want a medium action. You don't want, you kind of want that bow. You know, you don't want a stiff rod. That moderate tip is going to be a slow tip. And like I mentioned earlier, kind of reason people go to fiberglass because it's a slower, the tip just reacts slower, right? That's the way to look at it, right? So that bait, you got to, like I mentioned earlier, if you got a stiff rod and a fast tip, extra fast tip on a rod, it just, the bait's got nowhere to go. It just wedges in there and just wants to roll and get hung, right?
And that's what most of my rods are, which is what exactly my problem.
Yeah. It's crazy. You'll see the difference. You know, you'll throw, let's just say there's a log, right? And, you know, the rods you were using, you're going to get stuck 99% of the time. And you go up there and you roll it and it just kind of goes over it. Just like a spinnerbait. You're like, hey, that's what it's supposed to do, you know, and you'll see. And, you know, that makes all the difference, you know?
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm going to have to try that now. Don't tell my wife I have to get another rod.
Don't blame it on me. I don't want to.
Don't let her listen to this.
All right. I'll keep it to myself. I'll be down there, you know, in Dale Hollow, you know, coming back anyway when that's there. So I might be safe.
Man, that lake is, I love the lake. I've only been on it a couple times, man, but, and my buddy Addison, you know, Addison Johnson, you know, he fishes Dale Hollow a lot. He's been catching big ones over there throwing crankbaits. So, and he's been throwing DT-10s and DT-6s and wearing them out. So, it'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to trying you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. another retrieve that I heard of is actually Pierce Edwards on last week's episode was telling us about a retrieve that I forget what he caught. Was it yo-yoing or something like that? Basically, reeled down till it got max tip, then let it raise up a little bit, and then just raised the rod, let it go back down, reel in the slack, let it float up a little bit, keep repeating that. Is that something that you do much?
I do those at rattle traps. You know, just let, you know, cast it out, let it sink to the bottom. Is that what he's talking about? I imagine he is, but I don't know.
I thought he was talking about like with a crankbait, like reeling it down. And then
I think he was saying where you'd reel it down, start hitting the bottom, and then just stop and let it come up. Not much, maybe, you know, a foot, and then just lift up on your rod, let it plane back down, start hitting again, and then let it up, and then reel up any slack, and then keep doing that, you know. Have it kind of dig back down, plane back down, you know, if you will. I think is the way I took it
when that's what I thought he was saying.
Yeah, and that's, you know, everybody has their thing, you know. I don't normally do that. For me, my goal is to get that bait down, get it bouncing off whatever's down there as fast as it can, and have that fish react. You know, if somebody's figured out some magic deal, I say go for it, you know. You know, if something's not working, you know, a lot of times I'll pick up a shaky head or I'll change crankbait colors. A lot of times it's just the angle. It's so weird, man. Let's just say you mark a brush pile on 10 feet. You throw a worm in there, you can't get him to bite. You throw a crankbait, you can't get him to bite. You turn around, you get on the other side of it. You know, let's just say it's on a drop-off. You know, let's say you try throwing a crankbait in the deep water and come up the hill, basically. Sometimes that's what it takes, you know. So for me, it's more about angles and getting down to that depth. But, I mean, if somebody's figured out a retrieve that worked for them, that, you know, start and stop deal, then, you know, go for it. You know, whatever
works. So you're pretty much all just chucking one, right?
Mostly. Like, it's mostly about depth. And hitting off what I need to hit off. And, you know, and I use my depth finder a lot. I'm constantly, like, if I'm parallel on a bank, my eyes are mostly on my depth finder. You know, I got side scan on, side vision on, you know. So, you know, if I'm going down and I'm just parallel on a bank and I see a brush pile, I'll mark it. So when I come back next time, I'll make that cast to that brush pile or to that rock or that log or grass patch or whatever it is, you know, next time I come around there. So... But yeah, for me, it's about covering water and really you know, chasing the conditions at the time, you know, like I said, the windblown bank, you know, an area, a lot of times you'll have, let's just say you're fishing riprap, right? You'll have a mile of riprap, right? All looks the exact same. And for some reason, there's 30 yards where the bait's at. And there's like, you go 30 yards that way and your depth finder's completely blank, nothing there. You're like, what's going on here? But then all of a sudden you start seeing little bait balls or seeing bluegill, you know, a little bluegill or some crappie or some white bass. Then they start biting. And it's that one spot. You know, for me, it's more about that, you know, finding those little magic spots on everything around you, you know, and then marking those and, you know, marking them. And then when you come back for a tournament, you can go straight there. And if the bait moved, you just find it, you know. The bait has a lot to do with it, especially when you're fishing, you know, riprap and, you know, clear water, you know, stuff like that. You know, the bait is key.
I think pretty much the only basic we haven't covered, which I know you mentioned it, but is color.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's a good question.
How are you selecting the colors? I guess for different scenarios, dingy water, clear water, different times of year, all that.
Yeah, I've always kept it actually pretty simple with color. I really stick with three or four for all my crankbaits. You know, for throwing deep diving crankbaits, it's either white or like this citrus shad. I rarely get, you know, when I'm going 15 foot or deeper, it's either shad or citrus shad. Not like pretty much all the time. You know, this sexy shad too, you know, but these two, that's really it. If the water's super clear, like I'm fishing Center Hill or Del Hollow, sometimes you go to like a, you know, one of those, you know, you kind of see through them a little bit, you know.
Like a ghosty.
Yeah, like that, like light blue or light gray. Sometimes that'll work a little better too. But for clear water, I'm always sticking to shad patterns. And then for muddy water, like I love throwing a KVD 1.5 and, you know, muddy water, shallow, you know, 1 to 5 feet. I'm always throwing a chartreuse with a black back. Sometimes I'll throw, you know, a crawfish color in the spring. Sometimes, you know, if you, this really happens. I know people see it on YouTube, but this actually happens where if I'm running a bank and they're biting this KVD 1.5 and chartreuse with a black back, and I'm just getting them on one hook every time, or they're barely hooked, or they bite it and one comes up and, you know, throws the bait, there's something needs to change, right? You're getting bites and you're like, man, I want to stick with it, but try throwing a white, try to throw in, you know, a red color. And a lot of times when they start choking that bait, I mean, just like y'all seen the videos on YouTube, whatever, seen it on TV, it really does make a difference. You know, when you start, like people say, oh, I lose a lot of fish on crankbaits. Well, maybe if you would have changed colors, maybe something a little brighter, a little different, they would have, you know, ate it a little better. Because you'll know when they choke it, man. You know, when they come up to jump, you don't even see the bait. You're like, I got the right color. I'm going to throw this all day, you know, all day.
Well, see, but, that makes me wonder now, when I was telling my story about that tournament I was fishing where I was using that fluoro clear and I was having a bunch come off.
Yeah.
The color I was using, it was like that shad pattern that you had. And I actually lost it. I chucked it like 20 foot up into a tree. So, yeah. So nice. I lost it and I tied on a different color and I didn't lose any more the rest of the day from it. So I'm wondering if what you just said had something to do with that.
Yeah.
But yes, I do feel pretty good now because I feel like the colors that I've picked up, you know, are pretty on par with yours. I think the one I've had most luck with is like a chartreuse side with like a brown top.
Yeah. So
similar to the black and chartreuse that you got, just a little bit, you know, more brown on top than black.
Yeah, there's times where I do think color can make all the difference in the world. I don't think there's a lot of times that that's necessary. And that's just my experience. I feel like it's way more important to be where the bait is, to be at the right depth, you know, to hit the right angles. You know, staying in the right depth, I think, is key, because anybody can go and just throw a crankbait at the bank and could not catch a damn thing, you know. But if you figure out where, if you figure out where they're at, you know, and you position your kayak right and get that cast, you know, every time or every other time, I mean, you really can catch them. Like I said, I caught, my hands were hurting how many fish I caught in Gunnersville. I wasn't catching the right fish, and I probably should have left that area. I was catching a lot of 14s to 16s, then I caught that 22 on Sunday. And I think that big fish kind of kept me there, but I figured out exactly what depth, and then I could pretty much go in on a bank and pretty much call my shot. That's not always the case, but that's what it was, you know, for me last week.
I got one more color question.
Yeah, ask whatever.
I'm sorry, Sean. I didn't.
No, you're good. Yeah.
Okay, so when it comes to color, you know, spring, this past spring, everybody went insane for like the Firecrawl chatterbait, right?
Yeah.
So, like those red pattern crankbaits, do you feel like, you know, they're similar to that Firecrawl? Do you feel like they're effective in the springtime? Like, I guess everybody was having luck with the jackhammers.
Yeah, I always have some red crankbaits in the spring. It just sometimes, man, they will key on this red, like this, you know, crop. This is striking 1.5. You know, I have some of those. I had some other ones. Oh, let me show you this DT6 pretty quick. Y'all probably seen this color in the store before, but it's kind of like that flat color. Let's see. Yeah, these right here. I forget the name of the color, but you can kind of see them. It's that cool color, but sometimes they just key on that red. You know, they want to eat crawfish. They want, you know, they're kind of done chasing shad for a little while, and I mean, they will eat that red. Just, I don't know. Sometimes they just destroy that red in the spring, and
which is weird because I've never seen a crawfish that looks that red before. You know,
right? Yeah. Well, I agree. And there was an elite tournament on Lanier. I think it was last year, or maybe it was last year. This has been a weird year, guys, right?
Yeah, you can say that again.
It was last year. You know, the water was super clear. He was on Lanier, and he was parallel on a bank with a Arapahoe DT6 in that bright red color. And he was wearing them out. I think he was in the top 10, I think, the first two or three days and did real well. But, I mean, sometimes even those spotted bass, they just lock in on that red color in the spring. And, you know, I always have it with me early spring. You just never know. So.
Well, I have to keep some in the tackle box for when springtime rolls back around.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the other time that I did well, and I just happened to run into a guy at the bank, and he's like, "Yeah, do you have one of these red crankbaits?" And I was like, "Yeah, I have one." He's like, "Go over there and throw it by the," and sure enough, it was on fire that day. So, lucky enough to have those days every now and then. So.
Well, you know, what's cool about square bill crankbaits, and it's just another tool. Like, you know, if you got an awesome windy bank and it's springtime and they're biting, a spinnerbait will work, a chatterbait will work. I mean, those things will work. When that wind dies, like if I go to a bank, you know, and I'm catching them on a spinnerbait and that wind completely dies, switch over to a square bill. And it's just more subtle. You know, it will get those fish to bite when they don't want to bite a big spinnerbait or a chatterbait. So keep that in mind, too.
I know one thing I was going to ask. How about rattles? Silent or rattling? What's your preference, or does it change it up?
I use I have both. I do change that up a little bit. When you get a lake that's heavily pressured, I like using the silent crankbaits. When it's calm, I like using just like you would think. You know, I do switch from time to time. Am I constantly going back and forth between rattle and silent? No. But if I know if it's getting a lot of pressure and I'm just, say, I'm shallow cranking, a lot of people are doing it, or a lot of people in the area, you know, I'll try to go something more subtle. It's almost like, you know, kind of going, you know, like throwing a shaky head, like you're going to downsize and you're going to slow down. And, you know, that's kind of the way you can think of it.
Okay. Cool, man. Well, holy cow, that was a ton of good info. So, Brian, you got anything else? Is there anything you think we're missing, Craig? I don't know. Any other tips or tricks you'd throw out there?
I'll do a quick recap on what I try to tell people who are just getting into crankbait fishing. Number one thing is the rod. You got to have a medium rod. I don't care if it's a spinning rod, it doesn't matter. Spinning rod or a bait caster, you know, a 7 foot, 6 foot, eight, you know, around there, you know, and I'm talking 10 foot or less cranking, right? It's kind of, that deep cranking is a different whole deal. If you're new to crankbaits, just figure out how to catch them on a square bill or a DT6, you know, or 10 foot or less. Figure that out first and then try to go, I think, to that deep cranking, because if you dive into that, you're going to feel like you're just wasting your time, unless you get on a big school and you're like, oh man, I'm good at this, you know, and you get a lot of confidence early. So, you know, a medium action rod with a moderate tip, that slower tip is what's key. That's what keeps the bait from getting hung up. Also, you know, we didn't talk about this, but you know, when a fish comes up to eat a crankbait, right, he's going to come up, you know, when they open their mouth, they suck, right? So if you got a stiff rod, you know, it's just not going to want to, you're not going to have that give where that bait wants to fly back in his mouth. I mean, it will, especially if he's coming fast. But to have that give on that rod, you know, it keeps you from getting hung up, and it also help you hook the fish better. And then when they jump, you know how that goes, when they jump, you know, your rod will have more give. When they go to throw that crankbait, your rod will, you know, shock absorber, right? And you'll lose less fish. I mean, you're going to lose them on a crankbait. It happens. It's just life, you know, it's just part of it. But you will definitely have the right rod. And, you know, fluorocarbon or mono is fine. Like I said, I like mono because I change it a lot. It's inexpensive and I can cast it a long way. That's what I use. A lot of the pros use fluorocarbon, you know, a lot of the elite guys, you know, but a lot of guys, you know, some of them still use monofilament. So don't forget about it. It still catches fish, we promise. But those are key. And, you know, if you're new to it, start out with some KVD 1.5s, fishing 5-6 foot or shallower. Learn how to catch fish like that, you know, with the right equipment and getting the right angles. And I mean, once you do that, you'll get more confidence. And then you start throwing the DT10s, you know, I mean, then that's when you start getting to a depth a lot of people don't fish, you know, and you start catching fish that maybe don't get touched a lot. Because you go down a bank, you're throwing shallow, you're throwing shallow, but underneath you, that 8, 10, 12 feet, you know, your kayak's sitting over that a lot of the times. You're not even fishing it. And if you watch your depth finder, there's a brush pile with three fish on it. There's a big rock pile. You know, there's somebody's Christmas tree they put there, you know. And you can go back and crank that later in the day when the sun gets up real high, you know. And or, you know, obviously throw a jig or a shaky head or something like that. But I say for the guys starting, the new guys, is, you know, like I mentioned, the rod, it's just start 10 foot or less. Go catch some fish, and you'll gain confidence from there.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I'm out of questions. For now.
Yeah.
You know, after I get a little further into it, I'll probably have a few more questions. Might have to bring you back on here.
Yeah. Hey, we should do a follow-up one and see how everybody did. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. Yeah, no, I definitely want to go try some things too. So,
yeah,
awesome.
Well, I mean, we're in Pennsylvania. I imagine it's starting to get cool. So, I bet that fall bite is a real fall bite right now. I imagine.
Yeah, I want to get back out. I was out on the river. I live about maybe 10 minutes from the Susquehanna. So I fished that. Oh, I've been fishing that a lot.
I want to do that, man. Yeah,
it's fun. It's fun, and the more I learn, the better I'm. Like seeing what everybody's talking about. So, and I've heard that, you know, the even at the lakes and stuff, the fall bite is supposed to be really picking up. Somebody posted a video. I went to the river on Sunday and somebody posted a video of the lake I usually go to, and they were jumping like it was, they were just panning out across and all you could see was them feeding like crazy. I'm like, oh, that figures.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah. How it goes. But I caught a nice smallie on Sunday, so I can't complain. So,
yeah, I would love to come throw a crankbait up there with you on the Susquehanna and catch those big smallmouth. That's a dream trip of mine.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna have to go up there and crash on his couch sometime.
Absolutely, I'll make room for you guys for sure.
Call me.
We'll have to call Jody Queen too because he said that he wants to go whenever we do.
Let's go. Road trip.
Yeah.
My door is always open. I'll leave the light on for you.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Cool, man. Well, do you want to shout out any sponsors or social media or anything like that?
If you want to go to craig.kayakfishing, that's my my fishing page on Facebook. I try to release some videos there, you know, probably every 2 or 3 weeks. I just released the one from Gunnersville. Really, the main sponsor tonight was, St. Croix. I love those rods, especially that Legend Glass cranking rod, like I mentioned. It's just built. It's built to throw these things through all the junk out there. But you know that's a $250 rod, $270 rod. They have the new Mojo glass cranking rod that is that $100 to $130 price range. Killer rod. It's the same action. I'm 99% sure it's the same blank as the Legend glass. So that is something to look into. It's the Mojo glass. You know. They make those rods in Mexico, and they're awesome rods. I mean, they sell the mess out of those rods. So that's really a shout-out I want to do, you know, tonight. And, guys, I love talking crankbaits, so anytime you want to have me, I'm ready to come back. So.
Yeah, we'll need a, this is like the 101. We'll have need the – what's the next step up? I didn't go to college. Is it 202? Or,
yeah. Yeah, 200 level classes.
I don't even remember. That's 12 years? I don't know. Too long.
Well, we'll have to have the intermediate one eventually. Then we'll go to advanced and, you know, all that. We'll have to work the levels.
Yeah. Let's do it. It's very addicting. The thing is, it can be very efficient. And once you get really good at casting and put that bait where you want, you can go behind a lot of people and catch fish. And that's what makes it fun. If you're getting a bite, a lot of guys aren't getting, you know, somebody throwing a spinnerbait down a bank, you can go back and behind them and catch 3 or 4 fish. That's how you know you're doing it right. And you'll get confidence that you can do it anywhere, any lake, you know, any time of the year.
Cool, man. Wow. Well, thanks again for coming on. And yeah, tons of great information. We appreciate it. So, we'll have to have you back. So, everyone, this has been the Bass Fishing for Noobs segment of the Paddle and Fin podcast. We bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. Thanks, guys.
Later, y'all.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode on Paddle and Fin. Don't forget to go check out our website at paddle, the letter N, and fin.com. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel at Paddle and Fin. If you got a question, comment, want to hear from a future guest on a future episode, feel free to email us at paddle, the letter N, and fin@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Paddle and Fin on Facebook and Instagram. Shout out to our show supporters, Angler. The Angler button and app just makes for a better time on the water and creates a virtual logbook for every fishing outing out on the water. Shout out to Rocktown Adventures, located in Northern Illinois, for all your kayaking, camping, and hiking needs. TRC Covers, protect your investment. Catch Products, shout out to Catch Products. Go to catchproducts.com and put the Paddle and Fin logo directly on your catch board. Shout out to Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com, use promo code PNF20 and save 20% on all your jig and tackle needs.